Welcome back to the Tim Cavey Show. I believe in the power of content creation to build meaning, share ideas, support learning, and enhance relationships. And that's the mission behind this podcast. I'd also like to use the show to interview guests who have meaning and significance in my life. What I want to do in these episodes is interview parents, aunts, uncles, other individuals who have contributed to my life. I want to get to know them better, hear their stories, help to preserve their legacies for their families and future generations. With that in mind, today I'm speaking with my brother, Phil Cavey. I should say he's one of three of my brothers. Phil, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you feeling tonight?
Well, Tim, I'm feeling great. And first of all, it's an honor and privilege to be on your show. I've heard a few episodes and this is an exciting opportunity for me. So thanks for having me.
You honor me, sir. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Phil, I want to sort of outline for the listeners at this particular point in time. Well, first of all, tell people what the date is today.
Well, today's date is December 21st, 2021, and here we are, you know, at concluding the year 2021, and you are here in Winnipeg celebrating some family time. So thanks for coming. It's great to have you here.
That's right. We're sitting in your living room. You've got a heritage home on, well, we won't say which street in Winnipeg. Try to keep some details off the airwaves, but you've got a beautiful century plus old home. Right? And it's giving me lots of warm feelings. It's cold outside, but it's warm inside. We're sitting on some classic furniture pieces. You've got all the oak or wood moldings around your door frames. It just feels nice and cozy here.
That's right. It's an older home and lots of things on the wall to look at, some nice paintings and some pictures of family members. So lots of things to reflect on and be thankful for during the Christmas holidays.
Phil, let's talk about the many hats that you wear. And I put a few items down that came quickly to mind, but I'm sure we'll think of some other ones. So let's start with, I'm just asking you to sort of lay out the context for people who maybe don't know you. So first of all, you are a husband. Talk about that.
Thank you. Yeah, I am a husband and my wife's name is Hannah, and we were married in 2006.
Wow.
In Chattanooga, Tennessee.
That's right.
And we've had a lot of exciting changes over the years. We're proud parents of two young ladies, two daughters, and then two sons as well. So very happy to be living life with Hannah. I feel very blessed to have her in my life, and we're doing life together, and it's been quite an adventure so far. It's exciting to think of what may come ahead.
Well, congrats on 15 years this year, going on 16. That's really amazing. The years have definitely flown by. I remember well the outdoor dance floor there in Hannah's parents' backyard in Chattanooga, Tennessee, deep south. Well, I don't even know. Would she call that the Deep South? Maybe not.
Probably not the Deep South, but yeah, in the southern states. And you mentioned the dance floor. I would say that that is only a handful of things I would say are slight regrets on my end. I wish I had danced, you know, more that day. But it was a challenge. I remember just feeling not used to the 90-plus degree Fahrenheit temperatures while wearing my tux and walking around in the backyard. Oh, yeah. And feeling like, where can I find bottled water was probably more on my mind than, you know, joining in all of the dances on the dance floor. But yeah, great time.
The next hat that you wear, you've sort of touched on, and that is father. So as you mentioned, two daughters, two sons. Without going through all of the biography here, I mean, let's go right to, when was your first child born? Do you remember what year that was?
Oh, Tim, absolutely. Of course I remember what year that was. That was 2009. And remember many things about that day, and including the fact that we went to the hospital in the morning, went back home. I watched the Bomber game. Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and then we went back to the hospital, and then Grace was born that evening.
I think I still remember getting that phone call from you, you letting me know, Tim, we're expecting. And that was just amazing news that between the four brothers, one of us was about to procreate or already had procreated. Pretty cool. Next, Phil, you are an accountant. Give us a brief overview. What does that look like in your life? And when did that journey begin?
Well, I would say the journey really began in the year 2000 when I started university at the University of Manitoba and took some calculus courses and some other stats courses and management courses, and then headed into the management area. They call it the School of Business at the U of M. I think it's still called that, but ultimately I was heading down the road towards a commerce degree and had accounting in the back of my mind, Tim, right from the time I started university. Right. And then I think it was after year one, I took a couple of accounting courses and found them very difficult, actually. But I pushed through just because I thought I want to actually learn this enough so I can decide whether or not I like it. And once I got the hang of it, then it started to come a lot more quickly to me. And really sort of embraced it, then declared it as my major. Then in 2003, November of 2003, I did interviews at several different accounting firms in Winnipeg. Was hired on to start in September 2004 at Myers Norris Penny, so it was called back then, as a chartered accounting articling student at a handsome salary of $28,500, if I remember correctly. And that was in September 2004. And I remember a few things about that. But yeah, I've actually been with what is now called MNP for over 17 years now, which I probably wouldn't have expected when I first started, but the opportunities have been really cool. The variety of work has been awesome, and the experiences have been great. So there's been great growth opportunity too for me. So it's been good. It's been good for our family. Many challenging times in public practice when you have to meet, work extra hours sometimes and meet deadlines. But the mix of work has been exciting. And although sometimes taxing on home life, I think it's been rewarding in the big picture.
In the accounting world, I feel like MNP has certainly grown, maybe not exponentially, but they've grown steadily across the Canadian business landscape, business and personal, whatever different niches or sectors. I believe MNP is a top five firm in Canada, isn't it?
Yes. I think when you're looking at top five, most people would look at total fees charged and total income earned, let's say, through fees. And yeah, I think MNP is number five, if not heading soon to be number four in Canada. Yeah, it's been remarkable growth even since the time I started. When I started, MNP had one office west of Winnipeg. Pardon me, one office east of Winnipeg, and that was Kenora, Ontario, a small office. Wow. And the idea was, we're not really going into Ontario. We don't really want to go into Ontario or anywhere east of Winnipeg, but what we will do is we'll touch down in Kenora just because that's close to Winnipeg, and a couple of, there were some business connections out there. So yeah, things have really changed. Now we're all across Eastern Canada with a major footprint in Ontario and Quebec, and now in the Maritimes as well. So yeah, a much different firm in many ways than the one I started with. Same firm in terms of so much of its core culture, but different in terms of the size, no question.
Well, that's good that they've maintained their core culture and values. I'm just thinking back now, I've kind of forgotten, for those that know the Winnipeg geography, your first office was on the corner of St. James and Portage, that building, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah. And for that reason, it was when I first started working at MNP when I bought my first car. I took a $4,000 loan and I went out and bought a Dodge Neon. 100% financed. Oh. But I knew with my $28,000 salary, I would be able to chip away at that loan pretty quickly. So
we had our, so I mean, we don't want to go too deep into this right now, but that was the glory days of you and me living as roommates in Dad's condo on Henderson Highway with our two little coupes. I had the Chevrolet Cavalier, you had the Dodge Neon, and that's how we rolled.
That's right. Yeah, I know the first year there, I didn't have my own wheels. So my wheels were big buses called City Transit. And if you remember, I actually paid you either a weekly or a monthly amount to drive me around. You know, you drove me on the weekends to our hockey, our Friday night hockey group and our church group. So our church services on Sunday that we used to attend there. So I don't know what else you took me to, but yeah, you definitely were my wheels there in terms of my social life for that year, that first year.
Good memories. Another hat that you wear that maybe sadly in some ways, and understandably so, not a huge factor in your day-to-day life is brother. So we can celebrate. We have two other brothers. Let's talk about them.
Well, definitely. I tell my children often that their siblings are a huge gift, and it's one of the things in life that I would wish for them to embrace, one of their relationships, that is their relationships with their siblings. But yeah, I am super blessed to have you guys in my life. Yourself as my older brother, and then my two younger brothers, Sandra and Peter, who are, and I think you noted in a recent conversation, just the fact that, you know, each one of us has sort of taken on a different area of career focus and expertise, if you will, as I suppose any four people would. But it is kind of just neat to see, because we share so much connectivity, and then we can compare notes to how we might relate in those situations. And yet the actual subject matter, you know, we look at each other and are recognizing that we don't know exactly, you know, we don't quite keep pace with the other person's expertise in that subject area. So kind of neat to see. Great to have the connection, and, you know, just in the last couple of days, being able to spend time together, all four of us, has been pretty awesome.
You're also a son, which is sort of self-explanatory. It's so nice to have our parents in a good age, but really great health, seemingly, thank God. And they just bought a new condo. How does it feel to see them comfortable? They got rid of the family house this year. How does it feel to stay connected with them and have them in the same city? Kind of jealous.
Yeah, it's been great. Of course, during the last year at their house that they lived in for 35 years, we had this thing called the COVID-19 pandemic, which did sort of change all of our schedules and our expectations for visiting and our ability to visit and enjoy that as we normally would. But now they're in their condo. I'm super happy for them. I love how they've got it all set up. They've done different renovations. And yeah, I would say for looking ahead to 2022, I very much hope to be dropping in there often and just hanging out and having coffee in there, similar to the way you and I shared a coffee there this afternoon.
I really like their building, and I really like that, just the peace, quiet, security, all of those things check out really well. And they've got lots of amenities nearby that they can walk to. It took a while, actually. We weren't sure it was ever going to happen, them getting rid of the family home, but they finally did. Phil, outside of accounting, what is one thing that gives you joy and fills you with passion?
One of the things I really enjoy doing is spending time outside and just being physically active, whether that's rollerblading or biking or canoeing, running. I've done a lot of running over the years. That's slowed down in the last two or three, and I'm hoping to pick that up again here in 2022. But yeah, I think, you know, being outside and just playing, you know, in a sense. Some of the things that I listed off there are not team sports, partly because it's just harder in this season of life, right, to just be able to commit to team sports. But yeah, the chances to, you know, to play a game of soccer or football or tag football or whatever, like, I love that stuff. So
I do too.
Yeah, that's one of the personal things I definitely enjoy.
I think you and I definitely, from some of our teen years, have that love of the water. And you mentioned canoeing, and there's just something about pulling a boat out on the water. Or for me now, it's more often paddle boards, but.
Or just jumping in. I think that's my favorite still, is just jumping in and sprinting from the beach into the water and just experiencing that refreshing feeling.
Looking back on 2021, we're now 10 days from the end of the year, so it's rapidly drawing to a close here, but what would be one of your highlights of the year as you think back? What is one thing you're grateful for that took place this year?
Well, we had a few changes, I think, in terms of some notable steps, let's say, for our children. I had one child start grade 7. She's going to, that's our oldest. She's going to a different school now. And I think that's really, really cool to see her taking on that responsibility. And then our youngest started nursery school. So, you know, so you see those changes and you see those milestones. I look back on, I think some of the personal highlights for me would be the camping trips we took in the summer as a family.
Oh yeah.
Now, one of them had a bit of a challenging note to it, as Hannah actually experienced a significant injury, unfortunately, while we were hiking.
What was that?
Well, she had a bad fall and had to get stitched up, and wasn't able to walk for the next couple of days, unfortunately, and obviously made the trip a lot more challenging for her to enjoy. And therefore for all of us to enjoy in some ways, but we still had great memories even from that trip and the previous one. And again, just being outside and just enjoying the family time was great. From a, you know, year in review perspective, some of our closest friends actually moved out of country at the end of July. So we did have a lot of visiting time with them in June and July. And when I think back, even into the winter, we had a lot of time with them and regular time outside. So it was a year still with a lot of restrictions due to COVID-19, but it definitely had a different feel to it than 2020. It was definitely a rebound year in a lot of ways. And from the career perspective, 2020 was a very slow year, and 2020 was quite a rebound. So
2021.
That's right. Thank you. Yeah, 2021 was quite a rebound. So a lot of things were just really positive that way, and lots of reason to look forward to 2022.
Yeah, amen to that. I feel the same way. So speaking of 2022, what is one hope? Yeah. I know you must have a ton. What is one hope that you have for any of these hats? Just, you know, I'm sure there are lists, and we actually had a goal setting session with the brothers last night, which was great, but what is one hope that you have for the next year?
Well, there's a few things that are not life altering necessarily that I'm looking forward to seeing. One of those is I'm really hoping that quickly in 2022 we will be completely done changing diapers. That would be really nice. Yeah, so close right now, you know. Yeah. But also hoping that I can run a half marathon. It's been 3 years, I think. So I'd really like to do that, partly just to know that I can, even while I'm in my 40s. But I think the biggest thing from a seasons of life and, you know, sort of a life change perspective would be just really excited to sort of see Hannah identify and find the right mold for how her career will start developing. Right. And right now she's connected with a school called Freedom International School and getting involved there with different types of positions. So different types of roles. And I'm just really excited. I think that's really sort of the next thing to really see God like unfold in our lives, you know, and just to like open up sort of what's going to happen there. So probably that's the biggest thing on my mind heading into 2022.
Just want to go back to the running for a second. So I'm looking at sportsstats.ca, And in 2016, you ran in the Winnipeg Fire Paramedic Service Half Marathon. Thank you for supporting your Winnipeg Fire Paramedic Service. And
that's actually one of my favorite, that's in the fall there. And that's one of my favorite ones.
October 16th. Close to my birthday.
Now, what was my time? Because there was one year where someone ran in my place, and it's under my name, and the time is like a great time. Like what is it, like 1:30 something?
That's not cool.
It's 1:42.
Yeah, that wasn't me. That was the time. That was a guy named Matt Siemens, who is a superior runner to me, and is about 10 years younger than me.
Oh shoot!
Or more.
And then earlier the same year in June, now this time isn't too far off, but it's definitely in a little bit of a different class. 1:57, that was the Manitoba Marathon. 1:57 for the half there. And then in 2015, you also ran the Manitoba half in 1:49. So you're right there compared to Matt Siemens' time of 1:41. You ran a 1:49 in 2015.
Tim, the difference between 1:49 and 1:41 is massive.
8 minutes?
And, oh, yeah.
Over 16K?
21K.
Pardon me, 21K and a half marathon, okay.
No, that's you know, huge to accomplish, shaving like 20 to 25 seconds off per kilometer.
In 2013, I won't go through all of them here. You've probably got a bunch. In 2013... you ran the Manitoba half in 1:55. So you're actually trending. I mean, that last one that I read there is you know, shows that you've got some downward potential in terms of shortening your time. So good luck to you.
Yeah, my goal was 1:45 for a while.
Oh, okay.
I really felt like I was able to do 5 minute kilometers like so deep into the run. That I felt like with enough training, I would be able to do it the whole way, which would be, am I thinking of that correctly? Which would be 1:45? Yeah, that would be 21 kilometers at 5 minutes. Yeah, 1:45. So, but I just never got to that point of the amount of times I could actually run quite that distance leading up to the race. It's quite a time investment. So many times in running a half marathon leading up to it, I would get to like runs of 13K.
Yeah.
14K. And then I would just know come race day, I'm going to be able to do 21. And sure enough, the last five would like dramatically start slowing down. Wow. So I do believe the potential was there. I don't know if the potential is there in my like physically now, but definitely 10 years ago, you know, with the training, I probably could have got to 1:45. But
does race day, here's a running question, does race day improve your performance due to the adrenaline and everything's on the line? Or just race conditions and the crowd of people hurt your performance? What do you think? Is it a net win or loss?
I think a net win, certainly for me. Mm. Yeah, that type of thing was always motivational and exciting. And the only asterisk I might put on that is that a couple of the Manitoba half marathons were in pretty intense heat. Mm. Where on any other day in that heat, I wouldn't have run that long. Like I wouldn't have run even close to that long. Mm-hmm. To counter that though, there was like all these drink stations along the way and lots of cheering and motivational crowds and stuff. So, but yeah, some of them were pretty intense heat and it was pretty tough slugging.
Do you ever just blast through a drink station, just say, hit me?
Oh yeah. Well, they would have like showers basically pumping water out some people from their yards and stuff. So you just run through.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, sometimes you just grab the cup and throw it in your face and move on. And hey, speaking of highlights of 2021, I'm probably missing some, but I just want to mention for, you know, I don't know who's going to be listening to this, but I do want to mention to my friend James Harnett that one of my highlights in 2021 was enjoying the CFL's Western final with him at Investors Group Field, IG Field, actually, as it is called, on December 5th in the freezing cold weather. Seeing the Bombers beat the Rough Riders, second last game. Well, last game before the Grey Cup.
Western Final,
yeah.
Yeah.
What a great game and memory there with him.
Game.
And I'm thankful to him for sharing that memory with me.
He's a good man. Shout out to James. That was a messy first half for the Blue Bombers. We're talking Canadian football, three down football here. But they had such a great control of the ball all season, and then they gave it away 5 times in the first half, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, and I mean, the danger leading up to that game was the fact that the Bombers hadn't played a meaningful game in like 7 weeks or something like that. So, because they clinched first place so early. Okay. But, yeah. Yeah. And another great memory from 2021 is my parents-in-law, Wallace and Nancy, visiting from Tennessee, actually coming to Winnipeg and enjoying some summertime experiences with us. So again, another cherishable memory from 2021. So there's definitely probably more in the bank of memories from 2021, you know, once I start considering that a bit more.
Yeah.
But it was a busy year in terms of work. And, you know, the kids at times were doing remote learning, lest we forget how the first half of the year was. Very challenging that way to get into good rhythms. And sometimes it was just, you know, one month, 1 week at a time. And then looking forward to some break time and summer vacation.
Yeah, that was a different experience. I know in British Columbia, where I live, no remote learning for the last, you know, for that whole 2020, 2021 school year. But I know Manitoba saw quite a bit of it, actually. So
it did wreak havoc on some of my goals last year, my New Year's resolutions. Although I admit I let it wreak havoc in certain instances, and you have to push all the more intensely in order to achieve some of what you're trying to, knowing that, you know, not everything's going to just be going according to a pattern every day, but we'll give it another try this year. Looking forward to some better routines.
Phil, looking way down the road, thinking about a 10-year horizon in your life, what is one hope that you have in terms of something you'd like to see become true by 2032?
By 2032, I would like to be in a position where I could retire from MNP and consider alternative careers.
Yeah.
Where I would like to be in a position where, or I would like to see at that point, Hannah really enjoying something and developing more opportunities as well in her career.
Yeah.
And, you know, our children doing well, you know, 2032, 10 years from now, you know, in theory, our boys are looking at finishing high school. So I do like to imagine that I will have time to really be investing in them and helping them cross the finish line as well.
Yeah.
And to really savor that point in life. So for example, if I've got one daughter who is out in at University of British Columbia, you know that I'm at a point in life where I can fly out there and visit her for the weekend kind of thing, if that's if I'm able to there. But I think one of the big questions in life in this season is what happens with the generation ahead of us, you know, and my wife's parents are in Tennessee and my parents are here in Winnipeg. And so just thinking about how I can best look to serve them over the coming years as part of that as well. So
sounds good. I like that vision. I don't know what that would look like or how it would shake out, but yeah, maybe we'll be able to host one of your crew if they decide to attend a British Columbia university. We've got a few good selections there to consider.
Well, yeah. I mean, at the very least, to be able to call up Tita Christine and go for sushi somewhere or something like that.
Yeah, for sure. You might need to consult your goodreads.com account for this next question, but what is one good book that you read in 2022?
I finished a book called 168 Hours. You Have More Time Than You Think.
Yes.
And that was a really good book. I was actually very skeptical about it by Laura. What was it? I'll have
Vander
Kim. Was that it?
Vander Kam.
Yeah. And yeah, that was a good book to read. At first I was skeptical about the idea of trying to jam in more activities in the 168 hours, but Really, the book is about, more than anything, it's about actually shedding activities so that you can do the things that are higher on a priority list if you were to actually sit down and think about what your life priorities are. So it was really good, really good, a really good stimulator of thoughts in terms of thinking about how to prioritize my time. So I really like that one. And I'm currently working through, I'm actually taking a long time working through a book by Andre Agassi called Open. I've been working through that one for a while, yeah.
Interesting.
I think I finished a couple other books, but they're not coming to mind right now. I'm not sure why, but the years get blurry, as you know.
Phil, let's talk about your love of hockey and the Winnipeg Jets. How are things looking for the club right now?
Well, if you want the perfect segue, Tim, I'll actually show you the book that I got for myself from Hannah. I did not get it for myself. Actually, Hannah got it for me for Christmas, a book called My Life by Timu Solani. So speaking of books, speaking of my love for the Winnipeg Jets and one of the hockey players that I've cheered for most of my life, or most of my adult life, a guy named Timu Solani. And so I have his book, brand new reading material for 2022, and I'm very excited to dig into it. So really thankful for a very loving and thoughtful gift, I think, by my wife, Hannah. Right up my alley. It'll be something good to read. Now I segued there a little bit to get back to books, but what was your actual question about the Jets?
Yeah, no, just I thought to do this interview justice, we have to touch on the Jets. Mm-hmm. I'm wearing a Winnipeg Jets scarf right now as we speak, yes. Owned by my dad. But the pride and joy, I mean, for people not in Winnipeg, the Jets are such a huge part of the city. You see their logo everywhere. How are things looking for the club right now?
That's right. Yeah, they are now. Winnipeg fans have been have had some high hopes for the team ever since 2018 when they made a run to the Final Four, and they've had a pretty solid lineup for a while. Now they lost two or three solid defensemen the year following, I think in 2019 and 2020, but they really beefed up their D line since then. So this year there were really high hopes and there continue to be high hopes, but they're currently out of the playoff picture and they're going to have to really fight their way back in. So I don't know. And now we've got the season on the postponed, or sort of postponed due to COVID caution. And so who knows? I'm a little bit sort of wary of the fact that this might be another lost year for the Jets.
Yeah, there are some really electrifying players. I love watching Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele, and other players on the Jets who just have skills that I just don't frankly see when I watch the Canucks play. So pretty exciting players and a great looking team, and I hope they are able to turn it around here in short order. You mentioned COVID and the latest variant. Where do you think COVID goes from here in 2022 as we blast through? It's been two whole years, Phil, since March 2020. Well, not quite, but coming up on two whole years. So where does it go from here, do you think?
I think things are in serious trouble. And the reason I say that is because I think in my mind anyways, the theory behind some of the immediate restrictions 20 months ago was that, you know, a tsunami's coming and we need to prepare for it.
Flatten the curve.
Build a canal through the city. Basically allow it through in order so that it may not wipe us all out.
Right.
But what seems to have happened is we've just constantly been trying to build a dike.
Not a canal, but a
dike. And we've actually, yeah, now extreme example. So I'm not saying this is across the board, but like, you know, at some times it's been like, okay, people stop your job and let's build the dike when we really need to be building the canal if we're going to invest resources. And you know, I think the canal in this case, to some extent, is beefing up the healthcare system. And we're just constantly hearing about how the healthcare system is just overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with all the money, the millions and millions and billions of dollars that have gone into subsidizing individuals and businesses during times of employment and business operational restriction. I just really feel like at a certain point that more of that should have gone into the healthcare system to be able to deal with people as they go through as they basically are infected with COVID. And I understand people might say, well, is not an ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure? And should we not just try to prevent as much as we can rather than just trying to deal with it after we allow people to get sick with it? And I appreciate that. And I'll just put out there that, yeah, I agree. There does need to be a balance there, but I do think that, you know, our country and our economy and as people, we need to keep going and endure challenges and sort of fight through them. And ultimately a solution is not to, sort of continue to, lift up our economy on the backs of basically made up money or, you know, unbridled debt. So, yeah, we'll see what happens there, but certainly massive restrictions I don't think are sustainable a second round. And I also don't think there will be a general will and appreciation for it like there was the first round. I think it was so novel in 2020 that people are, you know, sort of ready to see what this new thing is like to some extent. But I think we know now. And so where I think things go from here is I see it being just a real struggle and a real challenge for people because a lot of people will get sick and it might not look good. But I, you know, and there will be challenges because some in the medical field will seek restrictions and yet, you know, we know it's not sustainable. So in the business field, you know, people will be frustrated with restrictions and yet there will continue to be some level of restrictions. So right. Yeah, more of the same. I anticipate and more challenge ahead. And more work on vaccines and more work on, you know, something like that. But it's gonna be sort of just a normal that we'll probably be dealing with for months and perhaps years ahead. Happy New Year, by the way. It's like that was not like a joyful word from me, but there. Just more of I think if I can expand on that and maybe in a positive light and just to say that we need to figure out as individuals and as a society and as family and sort of group culture with friends and everything, how we don't let this sort of drag down, that we adapt essentially. Mm-hmm. And if, for example, if this meant into the future, we can't pack 15,000 or 20,000 people into an arena, then, you know, so be it. And the world's changing. That would be, it's hard to imagine and hard to accept that in some ways, but there's going to be other cool things we can do.
That's a positive spin. Appreciate that. I want to come back to the federal response in a moment because I want to link that with a question about inflation and your thoughts on that as a financial person. But first of all, the provincial response. Here in Manitoba, we had you had a conservative premier, Brian Pallister, who came into power some years ago. I'm not sure exactly. I think he was on a second or third term. And just soundly booed out of office kind of this year. Do you think he mishandled things in Manitoba? Were the restrictions too heavy in your mind or where did he go wrong?
Well, he had probably a few political errors that were not necessarily right. Errors in terms of policy.
Misquotes at the wrong time. Kind of thing.
That's right. Yeah. And I think he struggled in that area. More, you know, this is an opinion I would say, but I think a lot of his policies weren't so unique and others probably would have done the same, but they might have done so with a different flavor in terms of what they were saying at the microphone and at the, like you said, you know, comments at certain times. So, you know, challenges happening around the same time in 2020, 2021 with matters of importance to Indigenous peoples and matters of importance in terms of racism And he just, I would say, just sort of missed the political mark, missed the political opportunity totally. That was there for him, and instead seemed to always sort of be catching up or falling behind that way. So in terms of, you know, him as a person and what, or I should say just in terms of the policies around COVID, they weren't perfect. I'm sure he would agree. I think I have a certain level of sympathy for all levels of government when it comes to, you know, their efforts to try to bring in the right policies at the right times.
One of the lowlights, not directly attributed to him, but I know in a year that we should mention, you mentioned Indigenous issues, and this was a year that mass burial grounds were discovered around several Canadian residential schools across the country. And the country was really horrified by some of the additional information about the legacy of residential schools and the colonization that has taken place in this country. And in the context of all of that, you mentioned it. I mean, there were easy political points to be made by any premier or leader across the country for simply acknowledging this this awful history and pledging forward progress in the relationship with Indigenous peoples. Easy, like, no-brainer. The mood of the country is there. And then I think one low moment was I remember watching his new Minister of Indigenous Affairs or something to that effect, like getting up and kind of equivocating or you know, kind of almost defending the history of residential schools on like day one of his job. Right. Do you remember that?
Yes. Oh yeah. Very well. Yeah. It got to the point, I think, where even when he did make good statements, they were taken as like, well, you're just saying that for politics. Like, or you're saying that for political gain, or that's not really genuine, that, you know, that I think it got to the point where he wasn't able to sell sort of his genuine care anymore, you know, whether he had it or not. It wasn't coming across that way to the majority. So probably perhaps not knowledgeable enough on certain of those issues as maybe he needed to be, or if he was, then yeah, it didn't come across that way sometimes, I think, to the majority of people. So yeah.
Well, Brian Pallister, I know he's got a big family and grandchildren and all that. I hope he is doing well in his new career or the new chapter, whatever that looks like for him.
That's right. And you know, I think he definitely did take a lot of harsh criticism, and I certainly don't, I'm not here to defend his comments and so many of those issues, but I think we do have to take a step back sometimes and remember that he's human, and he worked in as a civil servant for 30 years, and you know, it's not an easy job, and he was under he was in new territory that, you know, dealing with the pandemic issues that no other premier has had to deal with. So I, you know, like or love or hate his policy during some of that time on the pandemic, I do have some level of appreciation for a guy trying to figure out how to meander through that difficult territory, and especially at the ages of 65, 66, 67, yeah, you know, whatever he was at the time.
It's tough. And no premier in Canada, certainly governors in the states, have won a lot of points on COVID policy. I mean, no matter where you land, people are passionate about these issues. People will be incredibly angry with you no matter where you fall on these policy issues. Right. Now, speaking of policy, we've seen some scary, or depending on who's calling it, scary levels of inflation that we haven't seen in 20 years. So we're seeing headlines about 4-5% in Canada this year, projections of up to 7-8% next year. Do you blame the federal government and the way the CERB checks and the way they've been sort of blowing money in all directions for that?
Yeah, I think so. Although I do subscribe to a thought that it's not just the Canadian government. I think it's
all Western governments.
It's yeah, basically. Yeah. And I think there has been some. Yeah, I think that is a spinoff of it. And there's certainly a few factors that combine there to sort of drive inflation.
Mm-hmm. Including low interest rates.
Yeah, they're interrelated, right?
Yeah.
And some of what the government was doing there has created inflation. Mm-hmm. But again, do I think that it's federal liberal policy? Yeah, I think that it's the right thing to challenge that policy, and it happens to be led by a liberal government. But I don't think that, if the government was a conservative government, if it would have been that different.
Right.
And I also think that, you see in the United States and in other countries, like they were responding in very similar ways. So
yeah.
Do I think that all the stimulus money was used effectively and in the best way possible? Definitely not in the best way possible, but then again, no one would have been able to achieve that. There were some really fast decisions being made. Budget, non-budget spending bills getting through pretty quickly in order to stimulate the economy when everything was being shut down. So
I'm coming to the end of my questions, Phil, but one last interesting topic that I wanted to touch on, because again, you're a financial guy and that's your wheelhouse. We've got a brother who is very entrepreneurial, very risk. What's the opposite of risk averse? risk embracing. And crypto. We hear constantly about crypto and just this idea that in 10 to 20 years, every contract will be done or will be confirmed on the blockchain. What do you make of the cryptocurrencies? Are you getting involved? Are you just standing back and watching at this point? What are your thoughts?
Well, I can tell you that I'm standing back and watching, and I don't own any cryptocurrency right now. Is there a chance that I'm missing out and I should be investing? That could be true, just like it is true that 5 years ago I should have bought a lot of Tesla shares.
Yeah,
20 years ago, I should have bought a lot of Facebook shares. So yeah, I kind of just look at it in that light. In terms of the actual, like, will it become currency? I don't really see how that would play out. And if that did play out, I think a lot of other things would be rocked and turned upside down. So I'm not sure that even in that scenario, that it would suddenly be extremely lucrative, does that really change the value if it was just starting to be able to be used as currency? It's already being able, you can already buy and sell it. So I'm not sure what that would change, but it could be that I'm too simplistic in the way that I'm thinking about that. And it's not something that I've really spent a lot of time delving into. That's for sure.
Phil, just watching your dear wife work over there in the kitchen a little bit and thinking about the different charities that the two of you are committed to, I think that would be actually a really good note to end this conversation on. Tell us about one of the organizations that is close to your heart, and or more than one if you like, but who is doing some good work here in the city of Winnipeg that you are passionate about supporting and maybe like to share with our listeners?
Sure. Well, maybe I'll be able to highlight two, one that Hannah's involved with and then we support together, and then one that I'm more involved with and we support together. So the first one being Freedom International School, which is a new school for really geared towards immigrant youth, youth who are recent immigrants to Winnipeg, and who primarily reside in the west end of Winnipeg. And this school really helps them to be able to get into the school system at a level and a stage in which they are able to catch on, I guess, to their educational path. In other words, a 17-year-old who's perhaps, just ready for grade 9, instead of that being a huge struggle of trying to force them into grade 11 or not do very well in a large system, public school system, if they were to be in grade 9 at an older age. Instead, this school sort of allows them to just really celebrate where they're at, and to be able to move forward. And it does so in a context which really helps to develop their character and their confidence in other areas in life. So that's right. Builds a sort of a familial atmosphere in just a building that they're using. You know, it's a very, very low budget organization, very new school, not a lot of government funding, basically no tuition fees for these youth. So, that's something that Hannah's starting to get more and more involved in and put her time into. And she's basically been taking on different roles. So we're excited to see that get kicked off. And we're also happy to support in a couple of ways there. So that's one of them.
And we should mention too, you mentioned the high level of immigrant student population. It's even more than immigrant. It's also a high refugee demographic, which means that often these kids are coming from various backgrounds of trauma of different kinds, right? And it's kind of a good time in education to be building that up. I feel like we hear the term trauma-informed practice all the time. And I just love that that's really the heart and soul of that school, right? Is paying special attention to some of these kids.
I think that's a very important thing to note. And I'm glad that you clarified that point. Immigrant, of course, people who immigrate to Winnipeg could be coming in with millions of dollars, you know, to the family name and basically really strong family supports in this situation. Yeah, it's exactly what you said, you know, coming into Winnipeg with really difficult situations, challenges in multiple areas, including dealing with history and dealing with present day issues. So the youth at this school, although they can succeed in many areas and it's awesome to see their skills shine through, they're also for the most part working through some challenges, some very significant challenges that many others are not. So yeah, it's awesome to see. Thank you for pointing that out. Yeah. It's awesome to see the work being done for those youth.
I was laughing with someone, I don't know if it was you or someone else recently, thinking about the small independent school that we attended growing up. I don't even remember having a counselor on staff. I mean, maybe there was one, and maybe, but I don't think while I was a student, you know, that was even a thing. And now at the school where I serve at in Vancouver, I feel like we have five or six counselors who are virtually full-time. So just the mood... We're starting to care for, you know, more of the child, which I think is so good. Right. And then what's the other one that you wanted to mention?
Well, please do join us in support financially for Freedom International School, as well as for Care Impact, where I continue as a member of the board. And I've been working with that organization for 6 years as a board member. And it's really a huge thrill for me. Care Impact was founded by Wendy and Harold Park, who really had a vision for caring for many children in Canada, thousands of children in Canada who are not really part of a family household or even really enjoy benefit of solid supports in their life, and who are either estranged from biological parents for a number of different reasons, or who are... maybe they're not estranged, but are not able to be cared for by their biological parents. Care Impact is also working with parents to help care for their children, whether they're fostering them or whether they've adopted them or whether they are just trying to care for their biological children and are just finding that challenging. So Care Impact is really all about caring for is all about helping to mobilize and equip churches, church communities, and individuals who are part of a church, to the church at large, to be able to care for children and families who are in need. And really, you know, that's a wide range of need there. But really, the organization is national in scope, and it has a footprint in about 7 or 8 provinces across Canada. A wide range of the network of of supporters and volunteers is probably over a few hundred at this point. And there's a few people on staff and across the country. And it's a great team effort to be part of.
All right, folks, that was Freedom International School and Care Impact. Phil, those are terrific organizations. Thank you for sharing them with us. I know Phil and Hannah would be grateful, dear listener, if you considered contributing to those worthy causes. And Phil, that is something that I think I will have to take up with Mrs. Cavey, or my Mrs. Cavey, about seeing what we can do to become a part of those efforts. Phil, thank you so much for your time this evening. You are a significant part of my life. I hope that continues for many decades to come. Thank you for your time on the Tim Cavey Show podcast.
Thank you for having me, Tim. Thank you for your friendship and for your visit here to Winnipeg. And thank you for wearing a Winnipeg Jets scarf this entire interview. I think that's one thing that made it go very well.